Welcome back to the audio version of the self-esteem book. We now bring you part two.
Chapter 5, Separate Facts from Interpretations. If your self-esteem is low, your focus is likely on yourself. Of course, we all think that we know the difference between facts and interpretations. But do we? Facts are actual happenings, void of opinions and insinuations. Facts are black and white. They're literal events that transpire and the exact words uttered in a particular situation. Exactly what someone says or does is a fact. A respected news journalist or a crime scene detective reports only the facts. In contrast, our interpretations attribute meanings to what was said or done. We're so accustomed to confusing these manufactured meanings with what actually happened that often we can't distinguish between the two. This is especially true with regard to what others say and do. Two different people can witness the same scene or hear the same statement and reach two entirely different conclusions about what was said or done or meant. Each swears that his or her version is the truth. But what both forget is that when it comes to what people say and do, there is no absolute reality, only each person's perception. We all view the world based upon our past experiences, our beliefs, our prejudices, needs, and emotional states. No two people will experience an event exactly the same way. In fact, the same person may perceive a situation differently if he is tired, preoccupied, angry, ill, or in an altered mental state. What we think is our objective reporting of an event is really the personally flavored version we create based upon the meaning we attribute to the facts, usually influenced by deep-seated assumptions and biases that we're not even aware of. How we interpret another's words is also a function of the way that we listen. Listening from a positive or a negative, accepting or judgmental, angry or easygoing state will affect our interpretations of what we hear. Our listening attitude never lies empty like a blackboard that has yet to be written upon. Instead, all our beliefs, opinions, hopes, and fears fill it up. We frequently do not hear exactly what people are saying or intending to imply. In fact, we only hear something if we have a background from which to interpret what is being said. Some people have a generous listening style or attitude, giving others the benefit of the doubt. Others come with a critical listening style, as though waiting to find fault. To effectively challenge the way that you listen, first identify how it is that you do listen. Then decide to consciously shift out of that automatic habit into a new purposeful and empowered listening attitude. Here are some common listening styles. I already know. Hurry up and get to the point. Do you agree? Disagree? Are you right or wrong? Do they like me? Do I look good? Listening to be offended. Here are some empowered listening styles. To learn something new. For the value, regardless of style. To consider non-judgmentally what was said. To contribute to the other person. To empower the greatness of others. Without attachment to what is being said. For what it's like in the other person's world. Identify what your typical listening style is and decide to listen in a new and empowering way. All it takes to listen differently is to recognize when you're listening in a way that doesn't support you and intentionally shift into listening with a receptive manner that does. By training ourselves to distinguish facts from interpretations, we can successfully avoid many of the misunderstandings that lead to daily upsets. All too often, we think that we're speaking about facts when we're actually interpreting what is so. For example, the statement, "Jim is a jerk," may seem like a fact to those who share this opinion, but it's really an interpretation about the things that Jim does. Saying Jim yelled at his wife and his son and he kicked his dog is a factual statement. It is what is so. No judgment is being rendered here. In contrast, when we take what happened and we provide an opinion about it, in other words, that Jim is a jerk, we unleash an emotional energy tied up with our judgment of what it means to be a jerk. From Jim's perspective, he acted in a way that people who are angry act. He learned this behavior by observing his own dad act in a similar manner. It's the only way that he knows how to express his anger. Although we may not approve of Jim's behavior, we can see how he may not share in this judgment that he's a jerk. Similarly, if we witness a woman spanking her child, we might say that the woman is abusive or cruel and think that we're reporting what's so. But perhaps the woman grew up with the belief that mothers who love their children discipline them as a sign of their affection. Her actions may stem from her commitment to her child's excellence. So you see, abusive or cruel are really interpretations to the situation. The facts are simply that the woman spanked the child. To that woman, perhaps, not spanking the child would, in her mind, reflect a lack of love and thus be cruel and abusive behavior to her. The underlying biases for these misinterpretations often go back to our childhood. Thinking they were teaching us right from wrong, our parents frequently labeled us as bad when our behavior did not meet with their approval. We were bad if we spoke out of turn, cried, didn't finish our dinner, left our room messy, or fought with our brothers or sisters. In an effort to control our behavior, our parents or guardians branded us with all sorts of labels like bad, lazy, slow, stupid, fresh, wild, or selfish. By becoming angry with us and seeming to withdraw their love, they appeared to repeatedly chastise our very worth, not just our unacceptable behavior. We took these frequently angry moral thrashings to heart and retained the stigma and the accompanying guilt long after the actual incident may have been forgotten. With respect to interpretations of damaged self-esteem, the concept of failure is a big offender. We accept as fact that failures are real and that they're bad. We mistakenly think that there are failures that we experience and that these reflect upon our value as a person. The notion of needing to avoid failure has us give up our dreams and run from any situation where the prospect of failing might loom. However, if we consider that there's no such thing as a failure and that failure exists only as an interpretation, we can develop some power regarding such situations. Let's reconsider past situations that we might have labeled as failures instead as valuable learning experiences. Such encounters are simply part of what it means to be human. When we no longer focus upon finding our flaws, we cease to look at experiences as opportunities to invalidate our worth. We can look more powerfully at the valuable growth we obtained from such experiences. By accepting that these situations legitimately contribute to our growth, we can actively embrace failure as an active learning experience. We can create a ton of it and realize the benefits that come from exploring new territory. It's important to remember that we all suffer from misinterpretations from time to time. However, for many with low self-esteem, this trap of misinterpreting what others say or do can be particularly damaging. A common habit of many with low self-esteem is to interpret the words and deeds of others as though they were intended as a personal affront. While not all people with low self-esteem share this trait, those displaying this tendency have others needing to walk on eggshells when around them. The more distorted the person's sense of reality, the more certain they will be that their impressions are accurate and that the world is out to get them. If left unchecked, this distortion can rapidly progress to a state of paranoia. If you tend to become easily offended, commit instead to unendingly recognize this tendency to judge harshly what others say or do, and rigorously choose to reinterpret life in a way that creates no offense. This supports your happiness and results in effective, upset-free relationships. As your self-esteem improves, this skill will improve. The need to manage these potentially offensive misinterpretations will always exist. The challenge is never over, and the danger remains to fall back into upset as soon as you forget this. Dealing effectively with people who regularly experience severely distorted interpretations of reality will require empathy. Realize their responses align with their view of the world that they are experiencing. They are doing the best that they know how in line with their misguided sensory input. Lovingly support them to continually reinterpret what others say or do in a way that carries no personal offense. This will assist them in realizing a newfound peace. Here's another exercise. Identify your most common automatic listening styles. How do these negatively affect your self-esteem? What new empowered listening styles will you generate to support your relationships as well as your happiness and boost your self-image? Reflect upon a recent upset that you experienced. Rigorously distinguish the facts of exactly what was said or done with the meanings that you manufactured about those facts. How do your misinterpretations diminish your self-esteem? Chapter 6, Moods. We will sacrifice our health, our relationships, love, peace, possibilities, and happiness just to be right. Give up your right to be right, and your self-esteem will flourish. Like glue, our moods bond the misinterpretation mechanism in place. We observe a factual situation. We immediately apply some meaning to what was said or done. This interpretation sends us into our most familiar mood. For the most part, this mood gets triggered as anger. The anger is typically first directed at those we blame for treating us unfairly, but can also be directed inwardly toward us, devastating our self-worth. The anger also will have a flavor to it that's influenced by the judgment that we make. It might be indignant anger. In other words, how dare you, if we judge that we or someone else has been unjustly wronged. Perhaps the anger may be marked by righteousness, as in, I can't believe you could do something so terrible. It might span the gamut from irritated or disgusted anger all the way to full-blown rage, depending upon how dramatically the episode triggers our sense of right and wrong. This angry mood often comes with a physical response. Some people become hot or red in the face. Others feel a tension or a pain in their jaws as they clench their teeth, or they may feel the hairs stand up on the back of their necks. Some may be stricken with pain in their head or in their stomach. Become aware of your own physical reaction to any situation that triggers such an angry response. This physical cue warns you that it's time to stop, drop, and feel. Stop the action and take a moment to analyze exactly what's going on. Drop the negative energy and release the anger that has you react negatively toward the person triggering your mood. Feel the opportunity to reinterpret the situation and exit the destructive cycle that would lead to further erosion of relationships and loss of self-esteem. For most, the mood of anger is the predominant emotion. However, some rapidly transform this anger into sadness or fear. This can be such a familiar and speedy transition that these people will be primarily aware only of being sad or fearful rather than angry. Often, this is due to their ability to immediately suppress anger, locating themselves in the more acceptable emotions of sadness or fear. People who have a tendency towards sadness will unconsciously scan for interpretations that will make them sad. If you tend toward a mood of sadness, recognize how often you take what someone says or does and interpret it in such a way that lands you in your sad mood. The same applies to fear. If being afraid is your prevalent emotion, you will use every opportunity to become frightened. You will interpret situations to be dangerous or scary when the same event would not trigger fear for those with a different mood. Learning to reevaluate what others say without attaching a mood breaks a cycle that sabotages your magnificence, your happiness, and your self-esteem. View the facts, not the interpretations, and you'll escape the automatic moods that have trapped you. Here's an exercise. Reflect upon a few recent upsets. Identify your most prevalent mood. It will be some form of anger, fear, or sadness. In each instance, distinguish the facts of what was said or done from any interpretations that you created that generated your mood. Create a new empowering interpretation about what was said or done in each instance that will result in you being mood-free. Chapter 7, The Vicious Cycle. Mike Smith, president of the Freedom Foundation, tells us that if you're a human being, you're a jerk, pretending that you're not. He says that enlightenment is finding out that you're a jerk and that everyone else is as well. We cannot be magnificent if we do not allow ourselves the room to be jerks. So let's recap the problem. Someone says or does something. These are the simple facts that occurred. Buying into the premise that life is a difficult and dangerous struggle, you attribute some negative meaning about what was said or done. This interpretation makes you angry, sad, or afraid, or gives you some version of at least one of these moods. Everyone on the planet does this to some extent. It makes you right and it separates you from others who see you as wrong and different. If your self-esteem is not what it could be, start to notice how you attach negative connotations to words or events, causing you to feel poorly about yourself. Maybe you believe that criticisms of others must be true. Perhaps you decide or agree with others that you're not worthy, that you don't belong, and that no one likes you, or that you're unattractive or stupid. or that you fabricate any number of other interpretations that do not allow you to be happy, effective, or powerful in your relationships. It's time for you to realize that you need not buy into this negative self-talk or listen to these disempowering opinions of others. Yes, it certainly looks like it's true. You are so accustomed to telling yourself or being told that you're less than others in some significant ways that you've come to believe that it must be so. It began early in life when you first accepted as fact that you didn't belong, that you were unlovable, and that you didn't measure up. You then looked out upon the world from darkened glasses that reflected this perspective. With this misguided outlook, you misinterpreted future events to reinforce your low opinion about yourself. The more you believed that there was something wrong with you, the more your interpretations developed and you built upon this delusion. The stronger the delusion became, the more your actions reflected a loss of self-esteem. Perhaps you isolated yourself socially. Maybe you became angry or violent as you resorted to aggressive or antisocial behavior. Perhaps you became arrogant in an effort to conceal your insecurity by intimidating others. Or you might have become a meek doormat or a people pleaser in an effort to fit in and be liked. Maybe you turned to food or to alcohol or sex or drugs in an effort to disconnect from the pain. Whatever behavior you adopted, you did so to protect yourself and to survive in what you saw as a dangerous world. You did the best that you knew how to do in dealing with the way that you perceived others. The good news is that you can now train yourself to see the world from a different, more positive perspective. This view will support you in acting differently as well. These new actions, in turn, will productively transform your relationships. People will respond more favorably toward you, and this positive reinforcement will support your self-esteem. So let's examine exactly how to create these new and empowering interpretations. Chapter 8. Manage Your Moods to Enhance Your Self-Esteem. Carol McCall, the author of Listen, There's a World Waiting to be Heard, tells us that 99% of people's reactions have nothing to do with you. 1% of what people are reacting to comes from the fact that your humanness triggers something in them. 99% of your reactions have nothing to do with them. 1% of your reactions are based upon their humanness triggering something in you. We want to disengage the self-defeating interpretation machine that we all tend to use. The key is to recognize when someone says or does something that activates your mood of anger, sadness, or fear, or some variation of these emotions, warns you to sit up and pay attention. When you recognize these emotions as striking, ask yourself the following questions. 1. What happened? Sticking to the facts, what was said or done? 2. What meaning have I given to what was said or done, causing me to feel angry, sad, or afraid? 3. If I put myself in the other person's world and give them the benefit of the doubt, what empathetic, mood-free explanation could I come up with to explain their actions? 4. Do I realize that their actions are not personal, even though they might appear to be on the surface? What was said or done is about the other person and not about me. And 5. How does this new empowering interpretation contribute to my happiness and my growing sense of self-esteem? When we put ourselves into the other person's shoes and ask, what must his or her world be like, and what could they have been thinking for them to have spoken or acted as they did, we take responsibility for realizing that no one can affect our self-image negatively except for ourselves. Again, 99% of an upset is about the person who's upset, and only 1% is about the person who supposedly caused the upset. By creating new interpretations that allow for empathy, compassion, and an appreciation for the other person, we alter our perception of the circumstances that occurred. We then feel better about the other guy and about our relationship, and it strengthens. We move from a world based upon the past to a life in the present where we can deliberately design the future on purpose. We create our world anew instead of being at the mercy of past events that happened to us. This eliminates stress, which is always the result of faulty interpretations. By giving up our right to be invalidated, we nurture our magnificence and we thus nurture our self-esteem. So in the old pattern, when someone says or does something, you buy into negative opinions or you create interpretations about what was said or done that disempower you. These misinterpretations hurt your relationships, make you angry, sad, or scared. You then react to the mistaken images that you've created in your mind about yourself and about other people. This in turn causes your behavior to reinforce this drama cycle, and this continues to erode your self-esteem. Furthermore, you continue to misinterpret what others say and do or believe derogatory opinions, thus strengthening the cycle and diminishing your self-esteem. Then the cycle starts all over again with someone saying or doing something else which triggers you again. There is a new pattern that you can now create, and that is when someone says or does something, you feel yourself landing in your mood as you become angry, sad, or afraid. However, you recognize that your initial reaction was to believe the negative opinions or to create negative interpretations that gave you your mood. You now decide instead to release your anger or your fear or sadness. This leads to you reinterpreting what happened so that your new interpretation keeps you mood-free and continues to strengthen your self-esteem. You then can recreate your future. You can rebuild your relationships and thus reclaim your self-esteem. You now ready yourself to reinterpret the next experience in an empowering way so that when someone says or does something, you're better able to respond to it in a way that is upset-free. Here's an exercise. Reflect upon the last time that you recall feeling upset. Create a new and empowering interpretation that keeps you mood-free. Notice how doing so supports your self-esteem.
Thanks for listening. This concludes this part of the Self-Esteem book. Please continue with part 3.